Welcome, everyone, to a special edition of Current Events, the podcast about science fiction television. Tonight, we're doing a special off-brand episode about the top 10 science fiction movies before Star Wars came out in 1977. I'm Jake McMillan, and joining me is Mike Slocum. Say hi, Mike.
Hey, everybody.
Okay, so now here's some interesting rules to how we can do this. I'm going to get your opinion, because this is how the James Bonding guys do theirs, and that is okay. That they announce their picks for the different levels, but you don't talk about the movie until both of you have mentioned it.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, you know, it starts going pretty quickly, and then you start to match up, and then we start talking about stuff. Does that sound good?
That sounds good. And I want to preface this by, these are not necessarily the best movies, but they're the ones that I saw and remembered.
Right. So, whenever we say top 10 best, we mean most important to us.
Exactly. Well, yeah. Maybe not even important, but I'm sure there were several on my list. I have like top 10, and then there's another 10 that fell off the bottom just because, you know, at the time I didn't really watch them. Maybe in retrospect I did, but, you know, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, a lot of them too may not be real, you know, top tier movies, but you watched them a lot as a kid, and they were super important. So they get on the list, and others don't. I mean, any kind of top 10 list is folly unless you just make it super subjective. And that's what we've done with this. Yes, exactly.
We embrace it.
And I want to say, I was really surprised at how difficult it was to narrow it down. My initial worry for the pre-77 list of movies was that I wouldn't be able to come up with 10.
Yeah, I know. I had that problem too. Yeah, turns out there were a lot more movies back then.
Absolutely.
Than you remember.
Yeah, because you always remember, you know, like those days, say pre-Star Wars, as being sort of bereft of science fiction entertainment.
Yep.
But not in fact, especially the 70s.
Yeah,
there were a lot of good science fiction movies in the 70s. So, So let's get started.
So how do you want to do this? Just go 10 through 1, we each list them, and then when we hit a common one, we talk, or how do you want to...
That's exactly how we're going to do it.
Okay.
All right, so why don't you go ahead and with your number 10?
My number 10, and we can talk about also-rans afterwards, maybe. Mm-hmm. Fantastic Voyage, 1966.
Okay, I don't have that one, so you can go ahead and talk about it.
Okay, it was for a kid in 1966. It was fantastic. These people got miniaturized. They went and traveled around somebody's body. It was like a completely different concept from, you know, most other science fictions of the time. You know, they were all about rockets or spaceships or aliens or UFOs or whatever. But this was all, you know, new sort of internal stuff, at least, you know, went from, I mean, maybe there were earlier ones, but from my memory, you know, it was an awesome ride. And, you know, they made it interesting in 60s, you know, mid-60s style. But to an impressionable kid, you know, it was a really cool movie.
So my memory of that movie was, obviously I didn't see it in the theater because I was too young, but they were going to show it on television, and they hyped it all week, and I was super psyched about it. We were living in New Jersey at the time, and so I was, probably 8 years old, and my mom decided, let's drive this weekend, let's drive into New England and look at all the pretty leaves. Uh-huh. And I had an absolute meltdown because we were going to be on the road that Saturday night when they were going to show Fantastic Voyage. So we start driving up through New England, and I was an awful kid anyway, but I reached new depths.
You were on a roll, baby.
So finally, my dad was just like, as we're rolling through the evening, and everybody's sick of being in the car. These car trips were really just my mother's idea. She just loved these things. You know, we're going to put three little kids in a car.
In the back seat.
And drive and look at trees, because that's what kids find interesting, right?
Right. And, of course, didn't have to drive, clearly, so...
Right, exactly.
Know, got to look out, got to just enjoy the ride.
Yeah.
So,
anyway, well, we're driving through Vermont, and I think the idea was we were going to go up there and back in one day. And that's why we were going to get in real late. That's why we were going to miss. And my dad was like, let's just get a hotel room, because I was just being so bad. So he made sure. And of course, back then you had to make sure that the sign on the motel said color television in every room. Mm-hmm. And so I got to watch it. And everyone hated me because I was a little brat and I got in my way anyway. But awesome. I didn't put it on. It didn't make the final cut of my list because I have seen it since, and it is.
It's not good.
It does not hold up.
It is not good.
So it didn't. It didn't really stick in my memory as a greatness, you know. So my number 10, and here's, this is kind of a weird thing I did, but you know, basically my first four are in order for the date. So the first two are from the 50s, the second two are from the 60s, just because in the 70s there was kind of a leap, you know, forward and everything got much better. But so anyway, my number 10 is The Day the Earth Stood Still. Is that on your list?
It's on my, it was in my also-rans.
Okay, yeah. So I'll just go ahead and talk about it. For me, the reason for this is it's one of the very first movies I saw where the alien was not the bad guy.
Yep.
You know, it was such a nuanced picture and yet so interesting that it even held the interest of, you know, like a 10-year-old whenever I would watch it on television. So, yeah, very, very important. Okay, what's your number 9?
The Planet of the Apes, 1968.
Okay, I have that. No, it fell off my list. So you can go ahead and talk about it. That was one of the last cullings.
Yes. Again, it was, at that age, it was a very impressionable thing. It was completely different. It was like suddenly people were sort of thrust into this situation, and I mean, you know, it was analogous to, you know, the obviously the apes represented, you know, some 60s kind of thing that they were trying to get across. I don't even remember what it was. You know,
I think it was race relations.
Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm. War, peace, kind of. You know, there were the very violent, warlike apes and the very peaceful scientific apes of course the scientific apes were the ones who were kind of trying to help out the stuck astronauts. But anyway, just the fact, and for the time the makeup appliances just blew me away.
Before that movie came out, there must have been 100 articles about the makeup. And I just remember thinking, holy cow. I mean, when you know, you'd look at like TV Guide and they'd show a picture of someone in full prosthetics and you'd be like, that just looks like an ape. That's incredible, right?
Yes, and even the extent that they went through into the acting and stuff to try and sort of encourage the...
Right. Yeah, for the first one.
For the first one.
Yeah, so back in those days, every budget for every sequel had to be cut by something like 20%.
Yes.
And so it finally got, I think it's like the fourth one, it's just, they're just rubber masks. For me, I was one of my best memories of going to the movie theater when I was a kid, because my grandmother, who lived in San Marcos, Texas, would just take me into downtown San Marcos and drop me off at the movie theater for the first matinee, which was usually about 11 a.m., with enough money to last for the day. And then, of course, back then, during the matinees, they didn't clean the theaters. They didn't kick you out, right?
Yep.
So the kids would just go, and we would just stay all day. And you would just make, like, disposable friends, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we watched this movie over and over and over again. And every time they showed that one scene where the female scientist or the female astronaut, her tube cracked.
Yes.
You remember? And so she had aged an incredible amount, and it was just a fright scare, but it got us every time. But you know, it was one of those movies where you really, as a kid, you didn't take any message away from it. It was just an adventure film, really.
Yes.
And it took me a couple of years to understand the final scene with the Statue of Liberty.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I you know, it was like, oh, finally I was like, oh, wait, no, he, that's Earth. He came back to Earth. Oh, you know, so yeah, it's, yeah. I can be a little slow.
Yep.
my number nine is Them. I watched this movie 100 times. Is it on your list?
No, I actually never saw it when I
Yeah, this is the only really good Big Bug movie. It was the first one, and it was
I think I've seen it. I've seen it since then. Yes, yeah. But it was, you know, like,
well, wherever we went,
10, 15 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, the UHF channel always had the rights to show this movie because we would see it, you know, 5-6 times a year. And, you know, it got to the point where it was one of those movies where you could just turn it on anywhere. You knew exactly where it was, didn't need to catch up, you know, and it would take you on through. I loved as a kid, it starts out as a horror movie and ends up as an action film, you know, when they're chasing the ants through the sewers of Los Angeles. The special effects for their time were very good, especially for my age at the time. Yeah. I bought them. And it's just a rollicking movie. It just goes. You know, it starts off with a mystery, turns into a horror, and then into an action film, and just never stops running. I love movies like that. Yep. So that was a good one. Okay, so now what is your number
eight?
Yes.
Now, okay, so I'm jumping around because I just tried to rank them.
Yeah.
Number eight is Rollerball, 1975.
I have that one. You have to wait.
Okay. No problem.
My number eight is 2001, A Space Odyssey.
I have that one. You'll have to wait.
Yeah. Okay. What's your number seven?
Now, this was an oddball because I just enjoyed it so much. Sleeper with Woody Allen, 1973.
Oh, that was a good one. I've kind of turned sour on Woody Allen, so I don't include any of his movies. But I remember seeing that at the time and loving it. Yeah. He also had a lot of really good predictions in that movie.
Yes,
he predicted gay marriage. He predicted the general acceptance of sex toys.
Yes.
Your Gasmatron.
No, that was just an awesome scene.
Yeah.
I just enjoyed the movie. It was, you know, it's marginal science fiction, but, you know, it was future and woke up. And so, and it was just, it was fun. It was an outlier. I can't stand Woody Allen now, but at the time it was, I was laughing.
I thought he was a genius for the longest time. I really look back embarrassedly on that. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like, I loved the movie Manhattan, right? And it took, you know, probably 20 years for me to look back and go, wait, that guy's a pedophile.
Yeah.
What am I doing? You know. Anyway, but yeah, you know, you grow up and you notice things. So,
your number seven.
My number seven is La Jetée.
Never saw it.
Yeah. So La Jetée is the movie that Terry Gilliam based 12 Monkeys on.
Oh, okay.
It's an experimental French film with a similar kind of loop, but it's really interesting because the filmmaker, I think he couldn't get financing to shoot it. So what he did was he took still photographs, and then he had actors do the dialogue over that, and the narration would happen over that. So it's literally just a series of still photographs.
It's like a slideshow.
Yeah,
like
annotated slideshow. Exactly, but it tells this story of the end of the earth and a guy going back in time to try to stop it, and then seeing himself killed as a child, seeing his grown self being gunned down. It was fascinating, and because it gave rise to one of my favorite movies post Star Wars, I had to put it on this list.
Okay, well, cool.
Okay, what is your number six?
Number six, Westworld, 1973.
Yeah, I gotta say, I didn't even like that movie at the time.
Really?
Yes, it was. I came away from it feeling very much like someone had put a science fiction cloak on a Western. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just because it starts off and it's one of these. You know, Michael Crichton was responsible for the Andromeda Strain, right, which was this incredible movie. It's brimming with science, right? And so when I went to go see Westworld, I thought we were going to get the same thing. And it really wasn't that much. It was very glossy, you know.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. It was, for me, it was one of those college movies where, you know, you go to the you go into the auditorium at college and they're showing a bunch of what are supposed to be influential films and stuff, and this was one of them.
Yeah.
And but it actually, you know, it's just those memories of, you know, the college analogy feeling of trying to go through it and, you know, and understand what it all meant and, you know, how it impacted society and how it's, you know, affecting our relations with the world. Anyway, so it was, you know, it was a very cerebral thing. But for all that, I look back fondly on those that effort to try and extract information out of this film. And
yeah.
So it was a...
Yeah, he's done better as far as actually I have two others on here that of his that or actually now looks like another one fell off. Ten really wasn't enough.
I know. You're number six.
Yeah, my number six, Soylent Green.
Oh, I already got that one. Yep.
Okay, so we'll wait on that one. All right, what's your number five?
Andromeda Strain, 1971.
Ah, okay.
Speaking of which.
Okay, I have that one, so we'll wait.
Okay.
On that, my number five is Death Race 2000.
Oh, yeah, that's on my list. We actually watched that as a bad movie night.
Yes, yeah. Although, the reason that I put it on here is that it is true that it is a Roger Corman low-budget special.
Yep.
And it is a bunch of B-grade actors, you know, running around in kit cars. And it's very cartoonish, but it's when you actually pay attention to it, it's actually a very good movie, and it makes a lot of really good points that are still salient now, especially salient now that we live in a corporate-owned America, right? So I was very surprised that night that we watched it for movie night. I came away with a whole new opinion of it.
Yes, and I agree, but at the time...
yeah, it was a drive-in movie, absolutely.
It was a drive-in movie, exactly.
We went to go see it, some buddies of mine and I, and so we're sitting at a drive-in, and so we're sitting there and we're drinking our Cokes and eating popcorn and watching this thing, and the movie ends, and this friend of mine says, I get ready to put the car in drive, and he goes, don't. wait for the rail, because every idiot in here is going to peel out, you know, because they're so overhyped by this movie. And I was saying, that was absolutely true.
So that was number five.
That was number five.
Number four.
What's your number four?
Logan's Run, 1976.
Yeah, I trimmed that one. And that was a tough cut, too, because I had a real Jenny Agutter hang up when I was a kid between this and American Werewolf in London.
Well, since it's not on your list, it was another one of those college movies where, you know, we watched it and we analyzed it and we thought all about how deep it was. So at the time, it was a very impactful sort of movie, you know. And I actually in Austin here, they have a thing called Master Pancake where they go in and they do the Mystery Science Theaterize the movies, and they did it recently and it was hilarious. Even looking back on it, I remember it fondly. It's one of those ones where I've seen it many times. The farther up we get on the list, the more I've seen it and the more I enjoy rewatching them, or did enjoy rewatching them.
Yeah.
So
and also this is especially, you know, for us being in our age bracket.
Yeah.
You know, we grew up in a time without any kind of entertainment on demand, and so basically you got to watch whatever Channel 54 was showing. And so when you would find a movie that you liked, it would just be such a sigh of relief, because about half the time the movies they showed were terrible. My number four is The Forbin Project. Do you have that?
I do. It's not on my list, but I remember it.
Yeah, so The Forbin Project is the first real cyber science fiction type movie where they have the computer that takes over the world. And I loved that movie. I watched it over and over and over again as a kid on Channel 54. And I never forgot the ending, right? where it basically Forbin tells the computer that he will never relent and call mm-hmm. the computer God. And the last line of the movie goes to the computer, is yeah. never. So it's quite good.
And surprise.
Yeah, that's a good one. And it's one that was really presaged the PC revolution, the internet, yeah. you know, all that kind of stuff, right? So, okay, number three. What's your number three?
Number three, yet another one of those college movies, but this one I really enjoyed, Soylent Green, 1972.
Okay, good. We get to talk about Soylent Green.
Yes, we do.
Yes. So we know that from the trivia that Soylent comes from soy and lentil.
Yes. And a few other.
Well, yeah, there are other parts. Yes, to the green. The green one is stay away from the green.
That's right.
You know what? You know what's really remarkable about this movie? It's very good, but the trailer gave away the secret.
Oh yeah, yes.
It was amazing to me that they did that, because the whole movie builds up to this one moment, and as soon as they show it, you go, "That's in the trailer."
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But I loved it because it really showed a society with the kind of wealth inequality that we're seeing now, and it's getting mm-hmm. worse. It tackled overpopulation.
Yep.
Right, and the dehumanizing effects of disenfranchising large groups of people. I don't know if you remember, but some people were considered furniture.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
They basically came with the apartment. Mm-hmm. It was really interesting. You had a corrupt cop. You've got a corrupt society. You've got the wealthy living, you know, in a system
off of the people underneath them. Yeah. Literally.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. Yes. Like, standing on them. You've got the basically what we're turning into now, where you have a system that protects the wealthy but doesn't bind them, and mm-hmm. binds everyone else but doesn't protect them.
Yep.
Right. So So that was very smart film. And,
Especially for the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they had a lot of, you know, social motivation to make it then, but I think it doesn't hold up as a movie, but it definitely holds up as a concept. Just the effects and the acting and stuff was all over the top, but the whole sort of layout of the whole thing was just great. And
Charlton Heston's really interesting to me, because he's from that pre-60s over actor.
Yes.
Crew, you know, and some of those guys were able to hang on, you know, for a while, right? Mm-hmm. Doing parts where they could really chew the scenery, like movies like this and The Omega Man and, you know, all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. right? So, but yeah, you really see the contrast in styles between, you know, him and anyone else, you know, after the 70s or whatever.
Yes. Okay, what's your number three?
My number three is The Andromeda Strain.
Okay, there we go. Yeah. Oh, great movie. Yeah. And so prescient.
I got to go through the set when we went to Universal Studios as a kid. That was kind of disappointing. Don't do that. You see how cheap everything is.
It's a set.
Can you imagine, like, going to see, like, the sets for The Phantom Menace, and it's just a big mm-hmm. green screen?
Oh, yes.
But
I'd love to go see the sets for The Mandalorian, though, because that's giant.
The volume. I've been watching, if you really are interested in that, if you're watching Gallery on Disney Plus, I watch and rewatch it. It's just fascinating.
Yeah.
So The Andromeda Strain was fascinating in so many ways, because it was a really scientific science fiction movie.
Yep.
But it was also focused on bureaucracy as well, right? And if you remember, the sort of punchline of the movie was they almost destroyed the Earth because a piece of paper got stuck in a teletype bell and didn't mm-hmm. ring, right?
Yeah.
So that was fascinating. It was just fascinating, and it was the first time in my life I thought about the fact that, you know, we could be destroyed by a germ, and look where we are.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. And that's why it's, and it was, again, it's like, yeah, it's not aliens coming. It's not war. It's not nuclear war, which was the big killer,
right.
You know, the big science fiction killer back then, or aliens or, you know, monsters or whatever. It was a bug.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was.
And it was also a mystery, which I loved because, mm-hmm. you know, when it opens up, they have an old guy who survived and a baby mm-hmm. and they don't know why, you know?
Yep.
So yeah, pretty interesting. I loved that movie. It really sort of laid the foundation for truly scientific films, you know, mm-hmm. to be yep. made later.
Yes, it did.
Number two.
Oh, so you did your three? Yeah, your three was.
Yes. My three was Andromeda Strain. Yeah,
number two.
Wait, what was your three?
Soylent Green.
Okay, we talked about that.
Yeah,
okay.
We talked.
What's your number two?
Number two, a movie that I don't know. It was just, to me, it was hilarious. It was another college movie, but it was a lark, and I just loved it. It was John Carpenter's first effort, Dark Star, in 1974. Oh.
Yeah.
I just love that movie. It was just everything from the beach ball alien to the lawn chairs and the ice cube trays as ornaments on their spacesuit, you know, for the buttons and stuff. It was just so well done. I mean, it was so well done for the undoneness that it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, talking to the bomb and, you know, talking to the frozen captain. It was just, I got a huge hoot out of it. And so it was my equivalent to British comedy, entry here.
Yeah. Yeah. It never clicked with me like it clicked with everybody else. When I was in college, you didn't get out of a party without having to talk about Dark Star at some point.
Yep.
my number two is A Boy and His Dog.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Not on my list because I never saw it.
Yeah.
So.
I read the book, actually the novella. I was a huge Harlan Ellison fan, and I just consumed everything that he wrote. And when I heard they were making a movie out of this, which is my favorite story of his, I just couldn't wait. And it's one of those rare occasions where you rush down to the theater to watch the movie. They've made changes, which are necessary, and yet mm-hmm. you still really enjoy the hell out of it.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. John Johnson did a great job. And, just generally, it was just an excellent cool. movie. Really enjoyed it.
Good.
What's your number one?
Well, there's only one left, and that's 2001.
Ah, that's right. Yeah, 2001: A Space Odyssey. My first thought, like I said, was that was going to be the number one, and it was going to be mm-hmm. tough to scrape up other entries. But the more I remembered it, the more I remembered that I really never saw it at the time. Mm-hmm. I ended up seeing it much later.
Yes,
and I would see parts of it every now and then, but that's not a movie you can see parts of.
No, you've got to really immerse yourself in it. And
right.
I saw it when it came out, and it was breathtaking. It was a level above all of the effects were just a level above everything else at the time, and it just blew me away. It's sort of like going to see going to see Avatar on an IMAX, like at the first time it came out, you know, it would just be this expansive world and visuals and stuff that just, you know, seeing Star Wars on the IMAX for the first time or something. It's just, I just loved it. And the story and the science that went into it, you know, it wasn't spaceships rocketing around. It was how things could have gone had we not lost our nerve to get into space, and had we not got caught up in wars and all that other stuff. I loved it.
Yeah, imagine if the trillions of dollars we've wasted on wars had been spent on, you know, advancing science and flying into outer space. We would be living in a whole different world right now. Yes, I it's funny, I didn't see it, but I had the models and I played with them. I made them, built the models and of the ships.
Wow.
Yeah. But I didn't really know anything about it. And I did finally see it completely. I think maybe like 20 years ago.
Yep.
It's a beautiful film and it's an intriguing film. A little bit of the 60s philosophy kind of man stuff in there.
Oh, clearly. Yeah. It was a creature of its time.
And it was interesting, too, because, it's based on an Arthur C. Clarke short story, but it vectors out of there in a hurry. And he and Kubrick and Arthur C. Clarke were basically telexing each other to write the story as they went.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
Yeah, so very interesting. All right. Well, my number one is Rollerball.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is, I finally settled on Rollerball because that is a movie I still watch today and love. There is one tiny segment in the middle that is, if I could, I would edit it out, you know, and it's the part where they go to the computer and the guy is talking, oh, the computer is blah 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 blah, and it's pointless, but everything around that is excellent, and it is, has been so predictive of where we are today, you know. It's just, we are only like 5 years away from Rollerball right now.
Yeah, well, you know, it's, you could actually imagine that we're not even that far away if roller derby ever becomes just a little more popular.
yeah, I was talking more about corporate control of the government. Exactly. Yeah.
But I meant as a vehicle for that.
And I think, you know, one of my favorite parts of any movie is the opening of this movie when they're basically setting up the track before the game, you know, and then they're playing the corporate anthems, and you know, James Caan is standing in the, you know, to the side before he skates out onto the rink, and he's just pounding the side of his leg, right? Yep. Because he doesn't care about the anthem, he doesn't care about the people, he only cares about Rollerball.
Yep.
You know, and it's just so fascinating to me. So that's the 10. Do you have an honorable mention?
I have 10 that I'm just going to, or actually 11, that I'm just going to list out. And then any that hits your fancy, we can talk about it. If not, so in no particular order, Silent Running, 1972.
Oh, okay, let's talk about that. That's a good one.
Yeah.
That is a movie that broke my heart as a kid. I mean, I've always been anti-authoritarian, but that movie drove me absolutely apeshit, you know, because it's just, you know, it's just this government deciding, let's just destroy the last of Earth's forests.
Yeah. Well, first of all, let's take the last of Earth's forests and stick them out in space where they're very useful. You know, it's like, and then, we can't afford this anymore. Just jettison them. It's like, no. Yeah.
And Huey, Dewey, and Louie, the little robots.
Oh, love them.
That they had to be. Well, we all know that George Lucas basically borrowed from every science fiction film and book ever made to do Star Wars. And this has to be where he got R2-D2.
Oh, yeah, clearly.
The comedy relief sidekick robots.
yep.
But also, you know, a rare turn for Bruce Dern as a good guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah. It was, and that was the first time I'd ever seen Bruce Dern, and I just thought, you know, it was another one of those college movies that were, you know, very momentous.
Oh no, when this movie came on and I saw Bruce Dern, my first thought is, that's the guy who murdered John Wayne in the Cowboys.
Yep.
And so I was watching it like waiting for him to do something evil. That was a good one. Okay, what you got next?
Zardoz, 1974. Oh, simply God. Because Sean Connery in leather shorts and a hairy chest. I just died with that movie. It was just so funny.
You know, when I was a teenager, I loved the movies so much, I didn't have much of a taste for them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like I didn't care if it was a B movie, a Z movie, or an A movie. I just wanted to be at the movies.
Yep.
This is one of the few movies that I stormed out of angrily. Yeah.
Now, did we not watch this as
a movie night? Yeah. That was a movie night extravaganza, absolutely.
Oh, yes, it's great for drinking beer and, you know.
And then we all went and bleached our eyes at the sight of Sean Connery's hairy body in a bikini, basically.
Leather bikini. Oh, yeah. This guy kills me. Yeah. Okay, next on my honorable mentions, A Clockwork Orange, 1971.
Yeah, I was really surprised that A Clockwork Orange did not make it because I love that film. But I finally dropped it because it's not very science fiction.
Yes, yes, it isn't.
Yeah, it's really more social.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's a hint of science fiction. But yeah, that's why it fell off.
All right, what you got next?
The Man Who Fell to Earth with David Bowie.
You know, I saw that movie when it was in the theaters, and I felt like I had taken acid. Mm-hmm. I kept kind of just checking myself to make sure I was okay. Because it was the strangest thing I've ever seen. Yeah, and I loved Bowie. I was a huge David Bowie fan. And yeah, I thought he did a great job in this. I loved the movie, but it it did not adhere to the standard format of films that you're used to seeing, and you just kept going, I don't know what's going to happen next.
Yes, there's no plot. It just kind of rambles along. Yep. Next, Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, 1961.
Oh,
Simply because it was one of those, I don't even remember who... who the director was. It was the same guy that did the Time Tunnel and the Land of the Giants and all those other...
Well, no, that was the TV show. There was a movie.
Yes. Oh, right.
Yeah, there was a different... And it was starred Walter Pidgeon and it was... Yeah.
Yes, but this was the movie. Anyway, you know, just because it was 1961 and I hadn't... You know, I was young. I hadn't seen a lot of movies. This was cool. Submarines. Yeah. And, oh, it was awesome. Next, Time Machine, the Rod Taylor version, 1960.
Yeah, that was, you know, very good for a kid.
Yes, exactly. Right? Yep.
Yeah.
And that's why I didn't make it.
Yeah.
Let's see, what other, I'll just knock them off here. There was like The Omega Man, The Terminal Man, Death Race 2000, Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. Oh, I already said Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. And the day the Earth Stood Still.
Yeah, The Terminal Man as my honorable mention because I used to see parts of it, but I'd never seen the whole thing. And the very first thing I did when I got onto Netflix 20 whatever years ago was to track down this movie and watch the whole thing. And it's a damn good movie.
Yep.
It's very good. But again, it's not very much science fiction, so I went ahead and pulled that one off.
Yep, that's why it's not on the...
Yeah, another one I would bring up is A Crack in the Earth.
Never saw it.
A Crack in the Earth is one of those ones I used to see all the time. I don't know why, but essentially it's just it's about these they're trying to solve the energy crisis, and what they do is they drill into a volcano or something and they use it. Yep. I can't remember what it was, but they set off a sort of a bomb to do something and it literally cracks the Earth's crust. And this crack begins to race around the planet, right? And they don't know what to do. And so all I remember was that they tried to stop it by blowing up another volcano that was in the path of the crack, and they had to get ahead of it and drop a hydrogen bomb in there, and a guy fell in, and it whatever. But it was just one of those movies I saw all the time, you know.
Yep. Well, cool.
Well, we solved that.
Yes.
Now everyone knows the best 10 films pre Star Wars.
That's right.
Next time we will do. I guess it'll have to be like the 20th century post Star Wars.
Because
that'll give us 80s, 90s, and half of the 70s and split it up.
Probably too much, but anyway, we'll have to.
Let's see what the haul is. We may have to trim it a little bit, you know, like maybe just 70s and 80s. Although, honestly, there wasn't much good science fiction in the 80s. There was a lot of campy stuff, and if you rule that out, then you'll be fine.
I loved some of the campy stuff.
I know. I mean, absolutely. So anyway, okay, we did that.
Cool.
Good. All right. Well, thanks, everyone. We will be back on Sunday talking about Discovery, Season 1. And until then, everybody just take care. Bye.
Yep. Bye.